This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The catchphrase in the business world is disruption. Big legacy companies lumber along, churning out the same products they've always made, confident that consumers will keep buying them forever.
Then an upstart idea comes along, revolutionizes the business, and pulls the rug out from underneath the old industries.
And it seemed to be happening just about every other day in manufacturing, the auto industry, high tech, and now the next sector feeling the first rumbles of a coming disruption is
higher education, or even education overall, because the push for online learning is gathering force, and not just at Harvard and MIT with their groundbreaking edX project. But it's one thing to offer online classes, another thing to prove they're effective. However, a new study has found for the first time that students learn just as well online as in a classroom, and maybe even faster.
The report comes from Ithaca S&R, a nonprofit think tank focused on technology and education. The group says it also provides consulting services for academic communities making the transition to the digital environment.
Joining us now is one of the co-authors of the study, Matthew Chingos, who also spends some time as an education policy fellow at the Brookings Institution. He joins us today from Washington. Matthew Chingos, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk for a few minutes about the details of this new study, and then I want to sort of broaden out the conversation from there. But first of all, where did you perform this study? Was it at a college, a university, high schools?
The study was performed on the campuses of 6 4-year public universities in New York State and in Maryland.
New York State and Maryland. Okay. And can you tell us a little bit more about how you set up the study? What exactly did you do?
Sure. So the key feature of this study, what makes it different from a lot of previous studies, is that we did what's called a randomized experiment. This is the way that the FDA goes about proving that drugs are effective. So what we did is we found students on these 6 public university campuses who were going to take an introductory statistics course, and we got them to agree to be randomized, basically to have the flip of a coin determine whether they would take that intro stats course in the way it was traditionally taught on their campus, with usually in a 3 to 4 hour in-person kind of format, or in a hybrid format where most of the instruction would be delivered through an interactive online system, and that would be supplemented by 1 hour of face-to-face time each week where they would have a chance to answer questions and have anything resolved that they didn't understand the first time.
So they didn't get to choose. You just said, we're going to assign you to one of these two groups.
Right. Oh. They consented to be randomly assigned to either of those two groups. So we didn't get everyone. You know, there were several thousand students in intro stats courses on these campuses, but we got a pretty decent-sized number. We got over 600 to agree to participate in the study.
Okay. And so then you sort of sorted these two groups of students into respective categories, one getting the traditional classroom experience with the professor lecturing, the other with what you were calling a hybrid one, where it seems like the majority of their learning would be done online, and then an hour or so a week with a professor. What did you find?
So first of all, we found that they passed the class at similar rates. The students who took it online, you might worry, well, they would sort of fall off the wagon. They wouldn't stick it out to the end and they would drop out. But on average, the course pass rate was the same in the online and in the traditional groups. We also looked at scores on the final exam and scores on a standardized test of statistical literacy that we administered as part of the study. And on both those measures as well, the scores on average were the same in both groups. So that really suggests that the learning outcomes were similar. And we also found students reported spending the same amount of time outside of class working on the course. But we know the hybrid kids spent only 1 hour instead of 3 or 4 hours of time in class. So that's how we infer that they probably learned the material in less time.
I see. Well, okay, so because the actual total number of hours that they were devoted in total to learning this concept was fewer by virtue of just not being in class as much.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so it may not be that they finished the entire course content in half a semester, though.
No, it was still over the same 14 or 15-week schedule. But in terms of the hours per week devoted to studying this material, it was less.
Okay. Now, how do your findings here then differentiate or differ, I should say, from previous explorations of the efficacy of online education?
Well, the bottom line is there's not a whole lot of previous rigorous evidence on online education. There's certainly a large number of studies, but usually through no fault of the researchers, they weren't able to do a randomized experiment this kind of scale on public university campuses. The previous studies tended to be either a small number of students that are hard to generalize from, or they were more specialized, or they weren't a whole course. Maybe they were just a couple of weeks of instruction, or maybe they were even just learning a task. So what's so important about this study is that we were able to have the randomized design, which is the gold standard, and do it sort of at a reasonable scale with a pretty large number of students.
Mm-hmm. I do wonder, though, I have to ask you, this was an introductory statistics course, right? So it's obviously very quantitative, lots of formulas, numbers, graphs. Does that type of course, you think, lend itself better to online learning than maybe if you had done the same experiment with, say, an introductory English course?
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, subject areas where there is usually one right answer, such as statistics, mathematics, some of the natural sciences, I think definitely lend themselves better to online learning than other subject areas. So I don't think you'd ever want to have a 10-student, senior year Shakespeare seminar be taught in this interactive online format, because that's more based on discussion, an in-person discussion, whereas intro stats is more about learning certain things that a computer can teach you.
Well, we're talking about a new study that suggests that students learn just as well in an online course as they do in a classroom, and by a certain measure, maybe even faster. So, listeners, does this make sense to you? Have you taken an online course? What was the experience like? Did you feel like you learned faster? Do you feel like you learned just as well? Or maybe even better? And professors and teachers out there, when you hear about the coming disruption that online education is going to bring to the world of education, what does that make you think? Are you embracing it? Are you thinking we may lose something if instruction moves from the classroom to the computer? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us online at radioboston.org or on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I'm speaking with Matt Chingos. He's a fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington and co-author of this new study. And joining us now is Justin Reich. He's a fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society and co-founder of EdTech Teacher, a professional development consultancy for schools. And today, I'm going to call him Dr. Justin Reich because he's sitting across from me in the studio in his Harvard University graduation regalia because, just a few hours ago, you picked up your actual PhD from Harvard.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
He literally, listeners, is still sitting in the studio with his bright crimson robe on.
I came here from the diploma ceremony.
I think the mortar board's floating around the control room somewhere. Dr. Justin Reich for today, PhD, tell us, what's your first reaction to this finding that students may be learning just as well and faster online as they are in a traditional classroom?
Well, I have had the chance to look at Matthew's study, and I think it's a really nicely done piece of research for a number of different reasons, and I think it's important as well. One of the things that Matthew and his colleagues emphasize in the study is that there have been previous efforts to study this. One of the things that they tried to do was, in addition to doing a randomized controlled trial to measure the efficacy, they did it with a group of students that are not sort of special elite students. They didn't do it at Harvard or MIT or CMU. They went and found several public universities across the Northeast and Midwest, the kinds of universities that serve thousands and hundreds of thousands of students across the country, and found that this method of delivery, which required over the course of the semester fewer hours of a student's contribution, was as effective in meeting the learning goals of this particular class than other students. And I think Matthew and his colleagues are very cautious to talk about the limitations of the study, as he was just talking about, that there are certain fields in which it seems to be more likely that this kind of learning would be both efficacious and efficient. But if we can find those places, then I think there are some opportunities to have colleges that serve more students, at less cost, that provide more opportunities for students to take courses in different parts of their lives, mm-hmm. at different hours of the day, that kind of thing.
So a lot there that's in the sort of realm of the potential advantages of online education. Matt Chingos, Justin Reich just hit on probably what's the most attention-grabbing things when people think of the disruption that online education is going to bring to higher ed especially, and that's this cost issue. Did you do any examination in your study in terms of what the overall cost was for students to take this online hybrid versus the traditional intro stats course?
We did tackle that question, and the way we tackled it was by doing cost simulations. Because the thing is, you wouldn't want to look at the cost of doing this for the very first time, because you have to train people, it's a new thing. What you really care about is what it's going to cost you to do it 5 years from now, once everything is sort of up and running. So what we did was we got cost data on a compensation of instructors for some of these intro stats courses in fall 2010. And then we simulated how the cost might change if we sort of reorganized how the course was taught. So at two of the campuses we looked at, the course is currently taught in sections of anywhere between 25 and 40 students usually by either a tenure-track faculty member or an adjunct. So we said, let's say we reorganized it around this hybrid model where you only had one tenure-track faculty member overseeing the whole course, and then you had these Q&A sections, you know, the one-hour in-person part of the hybrid model that were led by adjuncts. And we found pretty substantial savings in terms of compensation costs. So the idea here isn't just that you want to, you know, spend less on higher education. It's that you could redeploy those costs in order to serve more students.
Did the students, and Justin, I'm going to ask your feedback on this too. The students didn't seem to have any concern or complaint that their actual access, physical access to the instructor was different, limited, not traditional?
Well, they still had, you know, that 1 hour of in-person time. They could still email their instructor. On average, when we asked students to rate how much they liked the course, they did on average say they liked it a little bit less. They gave it a lower rating. And they also reported that they felt like they learned a little bit less. But all of our quantitative measures of student learning indicate they learned the same amount. So it's hard to interpret that finding. It could just be that students aren't used to learning in this hybrid format. And it also probably reflects that this is a prototype online course. I mean, it's interactive. It has a lot of positive features. But if you look at it, it's not like a beautiful thing to look at. Mm-hmm. And it is not maybe it's not super fun. So I think as these courses improve and sort of add more addictive fun features, that could improve the student assessment of the course and perhaps learning outcomes as well.
Justin Reich, let me get your thoughts on that. I mean, how much does the actual sort of interaction, Socratic method potential of being face to face with a teacher really matter?
Well, in an introductory statistics class, it may not matter a whole lot. You know, it is entirely dependent upon what the learning goals of any given course or any given sequence of courses or degree programs are. If the goal of introductory statistics is to give people the capacity to, perform some basic statistical calculations, to manipulate some variables in some pretty routine ways, then meeting those learning goals might be totally satisfactory. You know, might be able to do that without very much interaction with the teachers or other kinds of faculty members. Although in the study, it is a hybrid model, so they're not entirely online. They get together 1 hour a week to connect with a human being. They have forums and other spaces to communicate with people to be able to help them and support them.
Mm-hmm. Now, Matt Chingos also mentioned that maybe this wasn't the most whiz-bang interactive online experience that a developer could crank out. And actually, Justin, I'm going to ask you about that in a second. But Matt Chingos, it occurs to me, can you describe to me in detail what the screen experience was for the students when they were actually doing the online portion of the test? The course, I should say.
Sure. So the course does replace the textbook. So a lot of it, what it is instead of reading a textbook, you log in and you go through these modules that I think one criticism could be that they're a little bit text heavy. You know, there's a lot of text to work through where you're reading and learning the material that way. And then there's diagrams and things like that. And then there are quizzes and checkpoints to sort of check your understanding. So they'll ask you a question. If you get it wrong, it might give you a hint and try to walk through how you might answer that question. So I think one improvement to this kind of course might be not necessarily to have it entirely video-based, but to add some more features that kind of make it less sort of just monotonous reading of a lot of text.
Okay, so there weren't any videos of the professor like answering a question or saying, this is a major issue in statistics and going into further detail?
I haven't gone through the whole course myself, but I don't think there were. I think it really was just text and some diagrams.
Were there interactive elements, a chat room or a place where students could maybe very instantly have access to other resources, that kind of thing?
I don't think that was part of the formal course, but I think a lot of campuses would add that as part of their hybrid, but also as part of their traditional courses, right? A lot of them use Blackboard and other tools to allow students to interact online.
Now, Justin Reich, the reason why I was asking Matt Chingos about that is because recently in a course that I happened to be taking, it was my first introduction to an all-online textbook. And I was dubious at first. I'll be honest. I was like, I like pieces of paper to be able to highlight. But it was marvelous. This textbook not only had the text in it on the computer, it had videos that I could click on, frequently asked questions that the professor had answered and were ready to go, interactive graphs. It was an economics course, links to actual news stories that related to the economic issues we were discussing in the course. It was terrific. So I imagine that the level of interactivity and level of sophistication of the actual content online, that must matter just as much in terms of students' sense of what they're learning and how much they're learning.
Yeah, I think all of those things are tremendously promising. And I think one thing that the study authors do a nice job of highlighting is that this is not a study which compares two fully developed models. This is a study that compares thousands of years old of traditional lecture-oriented course versus really a brand new approach to education. And the fact that this kind of prototype of online learning could compare favorably to something that we as human society have been perfecting for a long time is quite promising, because one could imagine that all the things that you're describing and the folks who are developing these statistics courses at CMU as part of the Open Learning Initiative are constantly refining these materials. And one thing that's interesting about this model is that you could imagine that we could invest an extraordinary amount of resources into this one online course because it reaches so many different kinds of students. It makes sense. You know, professors, the very best professors still don't have that much time to invest in each individual course for their 40 students because they have research responsibilities. They're teaching four other courses. There are people whose only job is to make a course like this as dynamic, effective, efficient, engaging as possible. There are certainly limits to what can be accomplished with this kind of learning media. There are certainly lots of learning goals that we could imagine for which this kind of method of online learning wouldn't be appropriate. But for the places where it is appropriate, there's tremendous potential here. And we really, we got a kind of, an even outcome between these two conditions when really one of the conditions is a brand new pilot preliminary approach. And that's exciting to think about, where this could go in the future.
We're talking about learning online and a new study that suggests students learn just as well in an online course as they do in the classroom, possibly even faster. It's a great conversation for us here in Massachusetts because, of course, Harvard and MIT have recently announced their new edX project, which is a huge online learning project that's getting going this summer. And it's a good indication of the coming disruption that online education is going to bring to the entire world of higher ed. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Lots of people want to get in on this conversation, Matt and Justin, so let me start bringing them in. Sarah is calling from Milford. You're on the air, Sarah.
Hi there. My comment had to do with the fact that I wonder if the online courses may be able to engage more students in some of those large lecture hall reader type classes where you can more easily anonymously fall asleep, as I may have in my Bio 101 class.
I can't believe you just admitted that on the air, Sarah, but I'm sure a lot of people at home are in the car shaking their heads knowing exactly what you're talking about. Now, was it the fact that the class was so huge that made you maybe not as engaged, or was it something about how it was taught? Do you think if it were the same course with, say, 25 students, it might have been better for you?
Absolutely. I think that because the lecture hall itself was so large that I could sit in the back, the class was also one of those 8 o'clock classes, 3 or 4 days a week. It was meant to be a weeder class, and I ended up doing well, but I had to work really hard outside of class because I missed a little bit of class.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call. Matt Chingos, I heard you tried to hop in there.
I was just going to comment that at the campuses where we worked for this study, they actually didn't tend to use that big lecture hall type model. They tended to teach their traditional statistics classes in smaller groups of 20 to 40 students where all the instruction was delivered that way. But I think it's certainly reasonable to speculate that this kind of hybrid model could perhaps have an even bigger advantage when the alternative, instead of being this smaller section model, is a huge lecture model.
Justin Reich, go ahead.
And I think also it only has to be better or as good for certain kinds of students. So there may be some kind of students who really benefit from the intimate personal connection with an instructor. And for those students, the best opportunities for their higher education may be in classes. There may be other students for a wide variety of reasons, because of work, because of other things, who really benefit from these kinds of online learning opportunities. So even if online learning doesn't have to be better for everyone, it has to be better for a group of people who we can serve in a different way.
Let's take a couple more calls. Dory is calling from West Roxbury. You're on the air, Dory.
Hi, I was calling just to say that I'm teaching a class for the first time at a graduate level, and I'm also a doctoral student, and all of my doctoral classes are person face-to-face teaching, but the class I'm teaching is called a blended course, which means I teach online with verbally recorded lectures over PowerPoints, and then we also meet in person for two solid days from 8:30 to 5:30. So it's sort of a combination, and it seems to be a pretty new way that the school is working on trying to make things more accessible and easier to access work without actually physically having to come into the school.
Dory, thank you so much for your call. Matt Chingos, your thoughts on that?
I mean, that's an interesting model. I think one thing that distinguishes that from what we were looking at is that is still limited by, you know, the number of people that one person can teach. So I think the idea here is instead of a campus-by-campus approach, which for some things may very well make sense, it's really worth thinking about a more system-wide approach. I mean, it wouldn't make sense for – I mean, every institution couldn't afford to invest the money it would take to build a really great course in a number of subjects. So you really need a system-wide approach to think broadly about this.
Hmm. David Barlow writes on our Facebook page, when I was in college, I took a class called Interpersonal Communication. It was taught online and would have been a much better class to take in person, which maybe would seem self-evident given the title of the class. But that goes to, Justin, your point earlier about this is not necessarily something that would be good for every subject being taught. But on that point, let's take a call from Dave, who's calling from Holden. You're on the air, Dave.
Hi. Long-time listener to NPR, first-time caller. Kind of exciting.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to raise a concern. I'm a high school teacher, and I'm seeing the trend towards online classes head towards high school as well. There's an awful lot of buzz about it in the school district where I teach. And the concern that I have is that for undergrads that are freshmen, sophomores, and for high school students in general, there's not just the content of the curriculum that needs to be addressed, but also sort of the hidden curriculum, the social skills that get picked up from being in a class. And I feel like that's not just a responsibility of high school, but now that I have so many seniors who spend more time texting each other than talking face-to-face, I know that's a skill that's important to build in college as well. And I'm afraid of those social skills being lost in the online courses. I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Dave, stick with us because I want to come back to you on that. But Justin Reich, your first thoughts on that.
I think it's absolutely a very serious concern. You know, the future model that some people have for this, and it actually connects to Mitt Romney's education plan previously, where he says, let's voucherize education. Let's have money follow the kids, not go to schools. Kids have their own backpack of funds to spend. Maybe instead of having them buy schools, they could just buy individual courses. So you could buy Spanish 1 from Rosetta Stone. You could buy PE from your local charter school. You could buy math from Khan Academy.
A true cafeteria-style education,
which is what the Fordham Institute and other folks have been advocating, which would, in effect, be, you know, incredibly dangerous to the civic function of schools. There's tremendous risks that are also, you know, I'm incredibly enthusiastic about this research. I think if we can find really sensible ways to apply it within our system, it can be very powerful in reserving teacher time for doing the stuff that we most need teachers to do, to develop critical thinking skills, to develop interpersonal communication skills, as an example. There are plenty of ways, however, that there could be some unintended consequences of these advances that we need to think very carefully about as we move forward.
Dave, let me ask you, I mean, you're a high school English teacher, you're in the classroom, you see this every day. First of all, do you feel pressure from the increasing excitement that online education is bringing for you to bring more of those technological tools into your classroom?
Yeah, the pressure is kind of distantly on the horizon, because of course in any given school district, you know, kind of you deal with things day by day as much as possible. But there is buzz about it down the road, and I think that part of the reason why is because class sizes are just getting out of control everywhere. And I do support the idea of online education. I'm just wondering how we're going to when it eventually does come around, because it does seem like it's coming down the pipeline, I'm wondering how we're going to really address those other skills.
Do you see it as maybe having the effect that it might free you up to actually focus more on being a teacher in terms of guiding students in developing those interpersonal skills if some of the regular teaching that you might be doing in the classroom wouldn't have to be done in class anymore?
I think that could be a possibility, provided that things lean more towards the hybrid programs that I heard you talking about a little while ago. That sounds like a safe route to keep the social aspect of the job, but still make the content more accessible and cheaper. But removing the classroom environment completely, it just makes me nervous.
Dave, thank you so much for your call. Let's take one more. Matthew is calling from Brockton. You're on the air, Matthew.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. What's your thought?
I'm a theater graduate from Northeastern, and that's a field where, I mean, we'd be some of the first people to advocate for, as the previous caller mentioned, human interaction, social interaction. But I was also a double major at Northeastern, and one of my issues with that education was I spent so much time taking required courses for my fields, entry-level courses that were required in the liberal arts education, which I'm a big proponent of. But those entry-level courses like the intro to statistics that you tested or basic history courses, basic math courses, my thought that I got excited about was if the pressure to teach those courses is taken off of the professors, if they have to spend less time doing the large-scale entry-level programs and can have the time and energy and focus needed to devote to more advanced courses, the more specific courses, the thought-provoking courses, the one that can really color and enhance your education. With that thought in mind, have you had a chance to really talk to many more professors or teachers and get their thoughts on that sort of aspect of this?
Matthew, thank you so much for your call. Matt Chingos, your response to that. Professor responses, I guess.
I think that's really an excellent point. We haven't talked to a lot of professors about this, but we have heard that there's some worries out there in general that these online hybrid models are going to be used to sort of get rid of faculty. And that's not really the way I look at it. The way I look at it is exactly the way the caller put it. This is an opportunity to reallocate faculty time away from these big intro classes that many of them, frankly, don't like to teach. I mean, who wants to teach intro stats for the 35th time?
Let me just jump in here. I'm sorry, because I do have a bit of a question of doubt there, because on the other hand, maybe it's exactly those intro courses where the interpersonal interaction with someone who's living the material matters most to keep students excited about it and want to learn more.
But frankly, at most of these places, you know, in a lot of these institutions, public universities we study, the majority of kids aren't learning intro stats from a tenure-track professor. They're learning it from someone who's a part-time adjunct instructor, maybe a good teacher, but it's more of a mixed bag. So I think there's a lot to be said for enabling faculty members to reallocate their time away from these big intro classes and towards classes where the interaction is more important and where, frankly, they get more enjoyment out of it and are more invested in it.
Mm. As I'm going to call you today again, Dr. Justin Reich, we've just got a couple seconds to go, but your last thoughts on what this study tells us is the next step that online education may take.
The next step for online education is to continue to pursue these kinds of studies, but I also think we need, one of the things that Matt's research lets us do is tell us that these things are equally effective, but we need to know much more about why, and we're going to need rigorous kinds of qualitative studies, design research studies that help us understand exactly what it is that makes the best possible online learning environments.
Justin Reich is a newly minted PhD from the Harvard's Graduate School of Education. He's also a fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Thank you so much, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Chingos, fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington and co-author of this new study we've been talking about today. There's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Matt Chingos, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, stay with us because coming up, we get some ideas for things to do around Boston this weekend, including viewing a trio of paintings now on display at the MFA.
This is our equivalent of Dancing with the Stars with Renoir, the musician.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.